Next on News for the Soul Radio.
Hear all of our previously aired broadcasts of News for the Soul online at News.
Next on News for the Soul Radio, it's time for Perfectly Holistic with Pam. Pam is a cat mom and holistic health seeker who, after suffering an injury that wouldn't heal, was led on a journey to seek out alternative, holistic, and natural medicine. She now shares what she learned, helping people and their cats along their path to holistic health. Pam has taken courses in holistic health for animals, muscle testing, and animal communication. Please welcome Pam back to News for the Soul.
Hello and welcome, everyone. It is so exciting and awesome to be back with you guys again. My name is Pam Roussel. I am the founder and CEO of Perfectly Holistic, and my passion is empowering pet parents, especially you cat people out there, and how to apply more of a holistic approach to your cat's overall health and well-being. And on our show tonight, I have a returning friend and guest, Mr. Brad Clinthorne, who has been in the pet food industry for a very long time now and knows a few things about pet food. And so whenever we're going to talk about pet food, I always think about Brad. And I do want to welcome our Instagram audience tonight because we are streaming. It's working. So we cannot see your comments. But if you want to pop on over to Facebook or YouTube platforms, you can actually type in comments and things like that and watch the show. And Brad, just so that you know, on the top right corner, you can see comments. So if you guys have questions, be sure to drop them in. We are happy to answer them tonight as, you know, as time permits. We can address those. But, you know, there is a little bit of a pet food scare going around in the industry these days, and probably has been for almost a good year, maybe a little less than that. And it has a lot of really sick pets. And so it's kind of shined the light on the whole issue of pet food and safety, and, you know, concerns, obviously very serious concerns of pet parents out there whose cats and dogs are getting very sick, if not dying. And so I was thinking this is a great time not to talk about the current events, but to talk about pet food safety in general, especially when it pertains to issues like contamination concerns and pathogen control, and just diving into who is making your pet's food and can you trust them? So we're going to be talking all this and a bunch more tonight. So Brad, thank you for joining me.
Pam, thank you so much for having me on. It's always great to hang out with you for a little bit.
Well, thanks for being here. So where should we start?
Well, you said something that I think is something definitely worth acknowledging. Can you trust your pet food company? And I think that's something that not enough folks think about when they're purchasing pet food. You know, you're in the aisle, you're looking at bags, you're looking at ingredient panels maybe. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you're finding foods that might look like they have some good ingredients in them, or they might have a nice story on the bag, but does that bag really tell you the whole story? You know, that was put together by marketers to make you go, wow, this looks great. But does that build trust?
Mm-hmm.
Or does it just, you know, build some excitement and some interest?
Right.
And I think one thing we definitely really need to keep in mind is this is a relationship built on trust.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're asking somebody to take care of one of your family members in a way that you really can't peek behind the curtain too much on. You know, you can open the bag and look at what's inside of it, but how much was that company willing to divulge behind the bag?
Right.
So I always love highlighting that this is such an important relationship when it comes to choosing somebody to help nourish your pet. And many folks tend to choose one food or one company and
mm-hmm.
feed that exclusively or almost exclusively, which makes it an even more important decision.
Right. And, you know, there's a lot of creative marketing, like you mentioned, mm-hmm. and a lot of that money goes into commercials,
mm-hmm.
especially for bigger pet food companies that have that kind of budget and influence. Mm-hmm. And they put together these beautiful heartstring tugging commercials out there that make you emotionally want to have a relationship with this brand. But that doesn't necessarily mean that what's in their food is really all beneficial for our pets, you know? And I used, before I knew better, I just thought if it said, you know, organic or grain free, and I used to feed kibble. I'm not too proud to say I used to do that because that's what my parents did. And so that's your paradigm, right? You grow up thinking, well, that's what my cat's supposed to eat because that's what we buy at the store.
Right.
And they have beautiful pictures on the bag, and it looks delicious, and it draws us in as pet parents, and it makes us think that that's a good product, right?
Right.
But not necessarily. And then when you start to dive into pet food labels and ingredients and starting to understand some of the marketing terms, you're like, it makes you pause, and then it makes you start to doubt, right?
Yep.
So... yeah, I think...
But doubt is good because doubt is the seed of that turns into a question plant. You know, out of that doubt comes questions. And some of those questions are really important ones that you should be asking your pet food company or at least seeing if they have available.
Absolutely. Because if they're not willing to answer your questions, then I don't think I would do business with them. Just personally,
That's not a trusting relationship.
No,
absolutely.
It's not. I don't want a one-way street. I want to be able to have a conversation with someone who is knowledgeable, and if I have concerns or if I have questions about a product or feeding instructions or, you know, especially if your pet has food sensitivities, you know, or allergies or severe health conditions where there might be a risk if they eat something that's in it and you're just not sure, you know, these are very serious concerns. So, and unfortunately, I would say by far and large, our veterinary community is not really trained very well in nutrition other than the prescription products that they market for the pet food manufacturers like Hill's and, you know, Royal Canin and things like that, because those are the companies that come in and train them in veterinary school about their recipes.
Right.
So they don't really have a whole lot of knowledge apart from that unless they go do their own study and learning on the side. So,
right, which is something you can help encourage just by asking them those tough questions too.
Absolutely. And if they don't know,
don't shut your vet out of your pet's nutritional life. Bring them into that conversation, but by asking them those questions more and more often from multiple angles, it'll just encourage more education. Nobody likes coming up short when they're answering a question. Nobody likes going, well, I've got limited resources to pull from. I'm just going to tell you what I think I know. Most people, when faced with that situation, will then go out, especially faced with it a couple times, will go out and do some research and do some learning. I'd say don't be afraid to ask your veterinarian those tough questions when it comes to food and nutrition.
Yep, absolutely. So let's start with trust. Let's start with companies. That's one of the things on our list. So let's talk about companies. Let's talk about where they're getting their ingredients, their sourcing, right?
And that's a fantastic question. I really wish that more companies were so proud of it that it would be right on their website.
Mm-hmm.
I want that to be the standard. I'd love to see this become the bare minimum where companies like Steve's that are really proud of this and sharing it are not the outliers, where we are not the
exception,
you know, that bar where we're not among the best, where instead that's the bare minimum, where every company is proud of what they're doing.
Yep.
That is definitely one great thing to point out. You know, when it comes to making a safe pet food, one of the most important things, and possibly the most important thing, is the ingredients that you're sourcing and putting into your food.
Mm-hmm.
And we've seen that in recalls in the past years. People, companies will put in these synthetic premixed vitamins, and it turns out the premix isn't exactly what they ordered, isn't exactly what they thought it was.
Mm-hmm.
They have way too much of one thing in there, and they, you know, weren't able to do testing before production or even after production. And now dogs are getting sick because there's too many synthetic vitamins, you know, too much of one thing in there.
Mm-hmm.
I knocked myself off my own train of thought there.
No, it's true. But
that is absolutely something that that all of us should be concerned with, is what is exactly going into this food.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a great place to start. It's a great place to start asking your pet food company and building that relationship. That should be a two-way conversation you can have with them. Where are your ingredients coming from?
Yeah. Is there any places in particular that you would recommend they not come from in your experience? The premix,
you know,
and things like that?
I care more about the quality of the ingredients. I mean, there are some places, you know, meats from China, you know, things like that. But for me, I care more about, because, I mean, there are some other really fantastic ingredients grown
mm-hmm.
in China.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean,
like mushrooms.
We all put labels on things that get imported from different countries, but some countries, that's where these things are produced, and that's where the best of the best
mm-hmm.
is grown.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't really eschew location as much as I eschew quality. Mm-hmm. What I will really want to look for is human quality stuff.
That's a good
and
point.
And this is kind of where it starts for me. When you see beef on the label, is that actually beef? Is it coming from the human food chain? Or is it stuff that was never fit for human consumption? Maybe it was found dead on a farm days ago. Maybe
mm-hmm.
it was maybe it's diseased. Maybe it's a disabled animal. You know, what exactly is behind some of these ingredients that are on the label? And so for me, that's the biggest thing first, is quality.
Yeah. Yeah. And unfortunately, the label's not going to tell you, unless you're like,
it's not
companies.
No.
Like Steve's or, you know, some other really high quality brands, you're just going to read the word beef on a label and think of a beautiful piece of, you know, ground beef or steak or ground beef or something like that. But that's not necessarily what you think is going in there is not what's in there, you know?
Right, absolutely. Yeah, there could be processing steps between the original farm and between the manufacturing, and a lot of times that processing is not necessarily tracked on the label, so you may not see what chemicals might have been mixed in or treated,
mm-hmm.
You know, used to treat that beef or preserve it in some way. And so, yeah, it's really important to start there. Start with the ingredients. Where are you getting your ingredients? Where are you getting your produce even? You know,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I know we focus very heavily on meat, and in many dog foods, meat is the primary ingredient, as it should be.
Mm-hmm.
But the produce is also very important, too. You know, if you're getting produce that's old, that's moldy, that's just contaminated with mycotoxins.
Mm-hmm.
Mycotoxins are toxins created by molds,
mm-hmm.
and they love growing on grains. They love growing on legumes and beans and things like that. And they can cause some really serious issues, or they can just slowly poison health in different ways over years and years. They can be very carcinogenic.
Mm-hmm.
Making sure that your company is acknowledging that, whoever you're buying food from, is acknowledging that, yes, that is a risk of ingredients, and here is what we're doing to mitigate or completely eliminate that risk. That's another thing that goes into sourcing. It goes into making sure that you're, you know, getting food from a good company.
So they need to be doing their homework and checking their suppliers' supplies and, like, maybe asking for guaranteed of analysis or third-party testing of some of their materials that they're putting into their food. Like, the manufacturer should be asking their suppliers, like, regularly. Like,
yes, absolutely. And the manufacturers are, you know, the best manufacturers are going to be testing anyway. And they'll certainly be testing their end product. Like, we will test all of our food that we put out for contaminants, for pesticides, for heavy metals,
mm-hmm.
All sorts of stuff like that to make sure that none of it is present in the food that we're putting out.
Right.
So all of that testing should be very important. That's another thing you should definitely be able to ask your food company about. What sorts of testing do you do? How often do you do it? All of that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Because in reality, they're supposed to be doing that, right? By FDA law, right? They're supposed to be testing, and I know that maybe they don't, well, they may not test every single batch like they should, mm-hmm. but when the FDA is not standing there over their shoulder going, what about that batch? You know, they're
right.
not regulating, they're not enforcing. So, you know, they may be turning a blind eye to some of that, and that's why some of these foods kind of slip through, because they're not being held to They're not being held accountable necessarily all the time, like a good, reputable company should be doing and is doing, you know?
Yeah, I mean, a really good company. And again, this comes down to trust. A good company will police themselves, you know? I mean, the reason that we make Steve's is for our own pets. You know, everyone who works at Steve's feeds that to their pets.
Mm-hmm.
And so there is no way. I mean, we would never want to hurt any animal, but there's no way we would want our own pets or any of the pets who we care for to get anything but the best. We are fanatics, and that's why we work for companies like Steve. That's why people work at these really amazing companies, because we are pet fanatics, health food fanatics.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you're absolutely going to get clean food if you use really clean ingredients, really clean sourcing. But again, that comes down to establishing that relationship with your company and making sure that they are actually using good sourcing.
Yeah. You know, in my line of work, I go through pet food labels a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting when you go to the website of some of these brands, they throw around the term high quality. And I'm air quoting for you guys listening tonight, high quality, you know, ingredients, high quality chicken and it is an easy word to say, but it's very deceptive because that's not necessarily true, because it doesn't mean it's high quality food that we would eat as humans, because it, a lot of this stuff is waste product from the human food industry. It's recycled from the human food industry.
It's the stuff that wasn't used for the lowest quality human foods that they could not put in there. Or the byproducts of the lowest quality human food production. Right. It's a recycling system for that stuff that nobody else would buy and would end up in a landfill normally.
Correct. Yeah. So therefore it's not high quality.
But that word, you know, there's no way to police that. I'm the quality police.
Right. So I just want to remind people, you may see that on someone's website, but that doesn't mean what you think it means. I think they just use a lot of marketing terms to make their food try to look better. Continue on. I digress.
So let's see. We started out talking about sourcing.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So that's one of the most important parts when it comes to building a relationship that's trusting, but also when it comes to food safety.
Right.
Really, that's what we're focusing on tonight, right, is
food
safety, how the best companies are making sure their foods are safe.
Correct.
Okay.
So let's talk about transparency.
Yeah, absolutely. And transparency is, I mean, we already kind of hinted at it. Mm-hmm. When you go on your food brands, your favorite brand's website, you should be able to find a lot of information. It should be available there for you to see. In fact, I haven't seen all of the pages on the Steve's Real Food website just because there's so much there.
Right.
But you should be able to find everything from the sourcing to information about pathogen control.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a big one.
Mm-hmm.
Even the highest quality foods are going to deal with pathogens at some point. So how are they mitigating that risk?
Right.
You should be able to find information about you can find information about trucking on our website.
Nice.
How we make sure that it's staying fresh from one place to another. You know, we keep our trucks at negative 27 degrees or below that.
That's a good point.
Another great example of transparency. You can go on our website and just be casually browsing and learn that.
Right.
What else? What else do you guys want to know from your pet food companies when it comes to transparency?
I've been listening to a lot of talks with Dr. Karen Becker and Rodney Habib and the Facebook Insights group. And they have Susan Sixton and Steve Brown come on and do pet food reviews, you know, and things like that.
Absolutely.
I know you know that. So one of the things is, like, on their wish list is for every brand to put a nutritional analysis on their website so that you can know exactly how much of every single nutrient, vitamin, mineral, you know, macronutrients, not just the macronutrients on the guaranteed analysis, but
right,
what is
fat, fiber, moisture. Give us a little bit more.
Correct. Give me a little bit more nuts and bolts to, like, what's the nitty-gritty? Sometimes these companies are not very willing to give a nutritional analysis because they call it proprietary. Well, your recipe should be proprietary, but the actual breakdown of the nutritional value should not be.
Right.
Because that doesn't tell you how much it doesn't tell you the recipe. It just says, okay, based on this, my cat's going to get X amount of, you know, vitamin D, and I'm going to have this amount milligrams or micrograms of a certain, you know, trace minerals and minerals and vitamins. That is important. That is important so that we know our cats are and dogs are getting their nutritional needs met and they're not deficient or they're not excessive in something.
Right.
You know, I think that's something that companies should strive for in terms of transparency.
And that's an awesome point. Absolutely. That's something that we keep on our website and we get a lot of compliments about. So people can go on there and see all the different breakdowns. They can see how much taurine is in each one, all sorts of different information on there.
Yeah.
Mineral content, yeah, vitamin content, all sorts of great stuff.
Exactly. Exactly. But I'm going to read some comments over here. So Bayla says, Hill's prescription diets are pushed by vets. She's in Ontario. And then Royal Canin gets pushed a lot, and then their non-veterinary food, of course. And lots of pet stores push kibble, of course. Kibble is, I don't know, what is your opinion? What's the percentage of kibble that's sold on the market in terms of the ratio of pet food? Is it more than 50%?
Oh, yeah, I'm sure kibble is still more than 50%. So when I entered the pet industry, that was 2011, 2012. And from my perspective at that point, kibble dominated the landscape.
Oh, yeah.
It was absolutely the biggest seller by far.
Yeah.
And I was a nerd back then as well. I would still, I just entered the pet industry. I just left the film industry, and the pet industry was actually a stopover for me. I loved pets, and I was like, this would be a great place to get my bearings. I just moved back to Michigan from California. I got to get my bearings and figure out what I'm going to do next.
Yeah.
And that's when I fell in love with helping pets through food.
Mm-hmm.
But even then, I'm this guy who would go home and spend hours reading and researching and learning about physiology and anatomy and what these animals should be eating. Even then, I still recommended kibbles probably 3 or 4 years before I finally discovered fresh, real foods.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, absolutely. Kibble. It is still by far the biggest, but it is definitely, there are definitely more and more people every single day feeding fresh raw foods.
Mm-hmm.
We are getting more people now than we ever have contacting us. Hey, I'm starting this for the first time. What do I do?
Mm-hmm.
How do I get started?
Mm-hmm.
So it is a beautiful time to be a pet. But again, I wish that real fresh food, at least small amounts of real fresh food, was the standard. I wish it was not the gold bar everyone is reaching for, but the standard. I mean, you would never feed your kid just fortified breakfast cereal.
Right.
Even if Kellogg's told you, man, it's got everything he needs, I promise. He could have Pops morning or, you know, any cereal morning, day, and night. Even then, you would still inherently know to reach for a strawberry, reach for an apple. And yet for so long, we just accepted that kibble is the gold standard. So
right.
It's a beautiful time to be a pet now that there's more and more fresh food making its way into their bowls.
Yeah. And Paciencia has a great question. She says, what food do you recommend for cheapest possible for low income? What is the biggest bang for the buck for someone who's really budget conscious that wants to do better? And it doesn't mean, you know, everyone is working from a different income level, but I still see that there's always opportunities to improve the bowl, you know?
Absolutely. Yep.
So even if you can't do
water,
yeah,
a couple times a week,
mm-hmm.
some fresh herbs tossed in the bowl.
Mm-hmm.
If all you can feed is that cheap kibble, at least pour some water on it or some goat milk if you can get some raw goat milk. There are lots of small improvements that you can make at home. What we will do is we'll take some fresh greens and I'll toss them in a blender with a little bone broth.
Mm-hmm.
I'll do that, drizzle that every once in a while over my dog's food.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, if you're at the point where all you can feed is kibble and you do have access to some salad greens like that, blend them up, give them to your dog two or three times a week at least, give them some blueberries.
Yeah.
Lots of berries are really fantastic for them. Fresh food doesn't have to be complicated. It really doesn't have to be all or nothing either.
Correct.
When I was running stores, most of the people in my store would feed 20% raw and 80% whatever kibble or processed food they were feeding before they talked to us.
Mm-hmm.
I did that for years personally, and I saw huge improvements just from that 20% raw.
Yeah.
I was feeding 20% Steve's and then 80% whatever other kibble that I would end up buying.
Mm-hmm.
And I still noticed much brighter teeth, more energy, just a happier dog. His skin and coat looked better.
Mm-hmm.
He just, his eyes were clear. It was such an amazing difference just from 20%.
Yeah. And I would also consider even just if you make cooked chicken, for example, let's talk cat for a second. Sardines and water are awesome. You know, if you have some leftover chicken breast or something like that, mm-hmm. that your cat absolutely goes crazy for, or rotisserie chicken, give them mm-hmm. some of that. It's even if it's cooked, you know, it's fresh. It's not processed like, you know, mm-hmm. packaged stuff is. So adding some fresh things that your cat likes, like food that you eat, if your cat is like pawing at you when you're having dinner and they want some of your food, that's a sign.
Right.
But just things like that. Even if you can do like some, like a mix, like a premix, like buy one of those packaged premixes and then get some ground chicken or ground turkey at the grocery store and mm-hmm. mix up the premix that has all the vitamins, nutrients, and all that with your fresh ground food. And mm-hmm. even if you want to just, you know, fill an ice cube tray and freeze that and pull out one little thing at a time and just make that your bonus for the day, it, mm-hmm. you know, something is better than nothing. So we have to just, you have to be creative on how you, mm-hmm. you know, can bring these ideas. Like you said, and I think the studies have shown even improving, taking 20%, replacing 20% of that processed pet food with something fresh like this can make a huge difference. So.
Yeah, absolutely. And for cats, I mean, honestly, it's a little, like I have 110 pounds of dog. It's a little harder to transition that to a full raw diet. For cats, if you're already feeding canned food, raw mm-hmm. food is usually actually cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like our Quest cat food comes in 2-pound bags of frozen food. It is actually the cheaper way to go versus buying, a decent level of cans. If you're mm-hmm. paying $1 or more per can, then our Quest is actually probably going to be cheaper, but it's going to be much better quality as well.
Right. Yeah. Let's go to, she has, what about is kefir? Kefir is awesome for pets. It's loaded with, well, number one, it's fermented, so it's great,
mm-hmm.
and it's fresh. Get plain, unsweetened, if you can, instead of, you don't need all the sugar sweetener stuff that we like.
Mm-hmm.
That stuff is awesome. And Rodney Habib just did a post on Facebook and everything just last week or the other day on kefir for pets. The studies are just phenomenal. So, mm-hmm. yeah, even if you just want to add a tablespoon into their food. Go for it, you know, that's awesome.
Yeah, I would start slow with something like that, for
mm-hmm.
sure.
Yeah, it doesn't take much. Just get them used mm-hmm. to it, so absolutely. So let's talk about how pet food companies protect from pathogens.
Yeah, that's a great question. And again, this is one you should be able to ask your pet food company, and they mm-hmm. should give you a great answer. And I always love pointing out here that no food is immune from pathogens, you know, even kibbles.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, kibble is the number one recalled by weight
yes.
for pathogens.
Yes.
People always assume that raw foods are going to have more bacteria, but we live in a bacterial world. It's everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And so so this is the question for your dry food company as well, if you're feeding dry food.
Mm-hmm.
But there are a lot of different ways that companies will control pathogens. Fermentation is an awesome one. We use a process we call gentle HPP.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people are probably familiar with high pressure processing or HPP. It's got kind of this controversial reputation in the pet food world. And that's because when it first entered the pet food world 20 years ago or more, people were using it very aggressively.
Mm-hmm.
And it would partially cook the foods because it would, when you put them under pressure, it would create heat.
Mm-hmm.
And so it would create this partially cooked, weird textured thing. It would destroy the enzymes. It would destroy some of the nutrients.
Yeah.
It was just not raw food. And so people would constantly, well, that's not raw food. In fact, you're partially cooking. You're really destroying a lot of it. It's changed a lot in the past 20 years. And actually, Steve's was one of the pioneers of taking this into the into a place where it can be usable on raw food and where it's still leaving the food very, very gently processed. And so what we did was we made some tweaks to the standard that everyone was doing. We reduced the hold time significantly. We reduced the pressure that we keep the food under.
Mm-hmm.
And we keep the food very, very cold. And by doing all three of these things, by making all three of these tweaks, we were able to actually pioneer this process where we are killing all of the pathogenic bacteria. So you're not getting any salmonella, no risk of listeria,
mm-hmm.
no risk of E. coli. But the beneficial bacteria, the probiotics, the stuff that we're putting in through goat's milk and things
yeah.
like that, is actually more pressure resistant and survives that pressure process. And so we kind of found this beautiful mid-level.
Sweet spot.
So all the probiotics survive, or you know, a good number of the probiotics survive. The enzymes remain in the food, which is that's one of the big, beautiful things you want in
mm-hmm.
a fresh, raw food are those wonderful enzymes.
Mm-hmm.
And so the enzymes are still in the food. They're still active. All of the nutrients are still there. And this is circling back to transparency.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I should have started when we talked about pathogen control. It starts with your sourcing.
Mm-hmm.
If you buy meat with a high bacterial load, if you buy meat from commercial feeding operations with tons of animals on tiny little space, you're going to have a higher bacterial load. You're going to have a lot more work.
Because it's an unhealthy environment that they're being raised in. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
They have weaker immune systems. They have more pressure anyway from bacteria.
Yeah.
Even the air in CAFOs and concentrated
mm-hmm.
animal feeding operations can be full of bacteria. That
yeah.
Not a good place to get your meat. So it all starts with sourcing,
mm-hmm.
but then we go back to the high-pressure processing. So through our gentle process, we're able to create this food that is still full of all of the good stuff. And now here's where we circle back to transparency. And this is where I was going before I took that non sequitur into sourcing. You can actually go onto the Steve's Real Food website, and you can see our test results of a batch of food before HPPing it and after HPPing it.
Hmm.
So you can see how all of the nutrients changed. We tested for like 95 different nutrients before and after this process. You can see how it all changed. Most of them slightly increased actually after that HPP. Four of them decreased in a way that was, it still set us above AFCO, but we want to really be in more ideal levels.
Mm-hmm.
And we were able to remedy that, to raise those four nutrients up just by adding in a little more organ meat and decreasing our bone content very slightly.
Sweet.
And so that all comes back to, again, transparency.
Yeah.
We talk about our pathogen control and we talk about how it's gentle, but you can go in and you can see the research that we did on our website if you just go and search for HPP on the Steve's Real Food website.
Yeah. What are the most common, I think you listed them, but the most common things that foods get recalled for are E. coli, salmonella, listeria, anything else?
Well, yeah, I mean, you have bacterial contamination. That's a big one.
Yeah.
Mycotoxins
yeah.
is often number one. And mycotoxins are, so every single month we do a webinar called Raw Food Safety.
Mm.
And we talk about all of the common concerns out there, and then we walk you through how we make our food from start to finish.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a fantastic webinar. Have a great time with it. But at the beginning, we ask everyone, what are your biggest concerns?
Yeah.
Are you concerned with nutrient balance? Okay, so that is one of the big reasons for recalls.
Mm.
Are you concerned with bacteria? That's
mm-hmm.
another one of the big reasons for recalls. Are you concerned with contaminants, and that includes euthanasia drugs.
Mm-hmm.
Again, that's very poor sourcing, and that is one of the big reasons for recalls.
Yeah.
Or are you concerned with mycotoxins? And mycotoxins are often the leading cause for recalls, and they never get any votes. Nobody ever votes. Nobody is ever concerned about mycotoxins. But
do people even know what mycotoxins are, though? They probably don't.
I don't think so. No,
no,
but
it's not even on their radar.
Recall. Yeah, absolutely.
Until they go take your webinar, they're like, oh, mycotoxins. And
well,
everybody, it's the new buzzword.
Yeah.
It's evidently something you need to know about. But
yeah,
if you're not feeding,
your big four.
Yeah, so if you're not feeding dry processed foods, chances are you're not going to be worried about mycotoxin contamination.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on what ingredients are going in. If your company is using legumes, if they're using grains. One company a while ago did a study of corn in the U.S. They sampled corn from all over the U.S. and tested it for mycotoxins, and they found that 98% of the corn they had sampled was positive for mycotoxins. Right. Now, we don't know that all mycotoxins are harmful. Just saying that, oh, there's mycotoxin content on it is not necessarily, you know, oh, my God. But it does point out that this is an issue. We do not know how all of these mycotoxins affect us or pets. And some of the more dangerous ones, like aflatoxin, that is the most natural carcinogenic substance known to man.
Right.
8% of the corn was positive for aflatoxin, you know. So if your company is using ingredients that have high risk of mycotoxins, how are they ensuring that they're not in the food?
Yeah.
I think that's a big question to ask.
It's a huge question to ask.
Because
a lot of times that's – okay, here's another thing. So if a company – let's say you're feeding one of these foods and your pet starts to get really sick – you want to obviously go to your vet and have, you know, look at that. But you also want to call the pet food company and just let them know, like, you know, I just opened this bag. I just opened this food. My dog's sick.
Here's
my cat's sick.
Here's the lot number.
Yes.
Here's how the food smells. Here's how it looks.
Yes.
I took pictures of it. All of that stuff is very important because it can, again, that's that relationship of trust, you know. It's a two-way street, and in a situation like that, companies like Steve's definitely want to hear from you.
Absolutely.
So what is going on? Yeah.
Yeah. And would you recommend they keep the food for testing purposes, or do they send it back?
I would recommend they hold on to it.
Put it in your freezer.
And either their vet or the food company might have further instructions. With many foods, like for bacteria, it's going to be hard to get a good test once the bag has been opened and it's been in an unknown environment. It's really hard to send that back to a lab and get accurate testing.
Yeah.
Right, absolutely. But, you know, if the food company is getting, you know, a lot of contact about one specific batch or a few specific batches, that is definitely a wake-up call for them to start doing that testing.
And unfortunately, it takes time. So don't sit around, take your pet to the vet and get emergency help, please.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, right, yeah.
They're not going to have answers for you in 24 hours, and, you know, chances are. What is the FDA's role in all of the testing and recalls? Do you know much about that? No.
Yeah, you know, I'm not 100%.
Yeah.
I couldn't give you a very good snapshot of what goes on that end.
Right. I do know that, you know, if you guys are ever curious, you can go to the FDA website and look up pet food recalls, and they do monitor, you know, what foods, how often, you know, categories, who to call them if, you know, you need to reach out to them for whatever reason. So my thing is I don't see a lot of public notices on recalls, and I know that they go on because the FDA keeps tabs on those things, but it doesn't come across my radar, and that concerns me because I'm in the industry Why am I not seeing them? So if I'm not seeing them, you know, they're not putting commercials on TV. How are pet parents even notified or finding out about recalls? Do you know what I'm saying?
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. And unfortunately, there's no easy reporting channel for every single company to share and use. I mean, true recalls will go through the FDA. So if you have concerns or if you have questions, that's a good place to look. You can always reach out to your company as well and ask them. But yeah, unfortunately, right now, there's no real one clear reporting agency who will get a hold of everyone. But I run into this in every single industry, too. There was recently a recall. My mom forwarded me. She loves forwarding me these emails. There was a recall for cheese. And it's like, well, if I had bought this cheese and she hadn't forwarded me this, how would I know about this recall?
Right.
I wouldn't.
Right.
You know? I worked at a dollar store years and years and years and years ago when I was a teenager. And we used to have products recalled for lead contamination, children's toys recalled for lead contamination. You'd hang up a post somewhere in the store, and that would be it.
Wow.
It's not like anyone would be notified.
Right.
Right, absolutely. So you really have to be your pet's advocate.
100%.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely.
But again, it also needs to be a trusting relationship where you can reach out to your company and ask them.
So let's talk about, there's a couple things on here on my list. We kind of talked about if you had to report an adverse event, you know, what you do, call your pet food companies, you can reach out to the FDA. Let's talk about how pet parents can help prevent food going rancid or pathogen exposure once they open something. You have any suggestions?
Yeah, and I mean, pathogen exposure in the bag, you know, just use clean utensils to scoop anything out of the bag, stuff like that. Wash your hands after you handle it is usually fine. It depends on what kind of food it is. When it comes to any kind of wet food, the biggest risk that you have is just basically trying to refrigerate it for too long. You know, you open that can in your fridge, you're feeding a tablespoon per day. Before you know it, 9 days have gone by and you're still feeding from that same can. Well, that's now a pathogen risk. You wouldn't do that to yourself.
Right. Well, I can tell you from being a cat parent, after like a day or so, cats won't even eat the food. They're just like, I don't know if dogs are so discriminating, but cats are just like, no, thank you.
Right.
So, yeah, and I do like to take the food out of a can and put it in like a glass container, because I think the longer it sits in a metal container, it just kind of more of those, that whatever is in there, the liners, whatever, just kind of leaches into the food and it just doesn't taste as fresh, you know? So take it out and then put it in a glass container and put it in the fridge. But I wouldn't store it longer than a couple of days because it's not going to be any good. I was also told that if you're feeding a kibble a dry food, buy small bags.
Yes. Absolutely.
Buy small bags and feed it as, you know, go through as quick as you can, because the minute you open those bags, Brad, go ahead. The minute you open those bags.
Yeah, oxygen gets into the bag. It starts turning the fats rancid. It turns these beautiful omega-3s into things that are not nearly as good for your pet and could potentially be kind of negative for them.
Yeah.
That's the last thing you want to be putting in your body or your pet's body is rancid fat, which also brings me to, makes me think of those containers. A lot of people use airtight containers. They'll get a 5-pound bag of food.
Yep.
They'll take it and dump it in there. As it gets down to the bottom, they may dump another one in, or they might empty it out, but then they just dump another bag in, and those rancid fats build up on the side and start accruing these really negative things that you don't necessarily want in there.
And you can smell it. I mean, it doesn't smell very good at all. But the other thing, Paciencia, just to answer your question, store your kibble, put it in a freezer safe container and put it in the freezer, because it will be less tendency to go rancid faster.
It helps stabilize things. Cold temperatures will definitely help stabilize that. And that's why again, fresh foods are going to be the best.
Absolutely.
These omega-3s, these wonderful fats were sprayed onto a kibble at the manufacturing facility. Who knows how long they met oxygen there? Who who knows?
Who knows how long the bag's been sitting at the
bag?
Yeah.
Right? Who knows how that bag has been stored? Maybe it's, I've been on a hot semi truck for a while. Maybe it's been in a hot warehouse.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's been in a store in front of the window. Who knows?
Yeah.
And so that's really where fresh foods have a huge benefit, because when you freeze a food and it's stored properly, pretty much all of the stuff that was in there when the food was harvested and prepared and frozen is
mm-hmm.
still going to be in there, and it's not going to have turned rancid or turned into something that actually takes you from good health toward poor health.
Right. Paciencia, freezer or fridge? I've heard freezer, but as long as it's cold. Like, if you have a larger bag, you could take out a portion of that and put it in the fridge, you know, for the next few days, and then just store the rest in the freezer and then just slowly refill, you know, as you run out of the stuff in the refrigerator. But the colder, the better. Just preserve it as best you can. And I wanted you to touch on the digestive tract of pets, because, you know, we as humans, we get kind of scared of pathogens and food poisoning and, you know, things
right.
like that. But can you share with our audience how cats and dogs' digestive tracts are so much different?
Yeah, they're completely different animals than we are. They're not small. I mean, if you tried to eat like a horse, you would get really, really sick.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it would really upset your tummy. If you tried to eat like a cow, it would really upset your tummy. If you tried to eat like a lion, you wouldn't have a great time. And dogs and cats are the same. They have very different digestive systems than we do. We have this very long intestinal tract that's made to pull the most out of anything that goes into it, plant, animal, whatever it is. We're made to be very flexible like that. Cats especially are not flexible eaters. They're very rigid eaters. They
mm-hmm.
are top-level predators.
Mm-hmm.
And so all they would eat is fresh meat that they go out and kill themselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now dogs, they're a lot more flexible. They'll forage, they'll find animals that have been laying there for who knows how long, and they'll say, oh, that smells nice, I'll have some of that. You know, but cats will only eat things that they typically go out and hunt and kill themselves.
Right.
And so their digestive tract is set up toward controlling the pathogens that you would find in those things, in those
mm-hmm.
those wild animals.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they've got a very low stomach pH, and then they have a short intestinal tract. And
yeah.
all of this is designed to get food in, mm-hmm. break it down very, very quickly,
and
then get rid of it quickly.
Right.
Yes, absolutely. And that's why their intestinal tract is so short. We have got a very long one. And so if we tried eating things with a higher bacterial load, it would have a long time to start causing issues in our stomach. Whereas, again, they're made to eat this wonderful, fresh meat, organ, and bone, pull everything there is to pull out of it, and then get it out.
Yeah, absolutely. I wanted to see if there was anything else we have not covered. Is one last thing I think was on my list was all the fear-mongering against raw food by vets. They put the fear of God into people because they think they're going to kill their pets eating something raw because they're going to, you know, get bacteria, which you just address
so
with their low.
For under 100 years. Yeah, kibble has existed for 80 years, 70 years.
Yeah.
And pet foods have existed a little bit longer. Before that, pets ate
raw food.
For millions of years before that.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you're
imagine
you're
that.
Chat, so about 60 million years ago is when the dinosaurs died off, and there were these small carnivores called miacids. And soon after that, the miacids split into what would become dogs and what would become cats. And the entire time from then till now, they've been eating fresh raw foods.
Mm-hmm.
So they can handle it. It's
mm-hmm.
exactly what they're designed to eat, 100%.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I think, you know, fear-mongering and stuff like that's just, you fear what you don't understand. You know, it's common. Humans
100%.
Do that.
100%.
That's just what we do.
Yep.
Absolutely.
So, don't let, you know, I think there's a lot of misinformation around bacteria and salmonella, you know, with feeding your pets raw food. I think, and this is what I asked a lot of people, is that do you cook meat in your house? How do you handle How do you handle making hamburgers? How do you handle, you know, cooking chicken? You know, do you wash everything really good with hot water and soap? You know, yes. Okay. Well,
do you eat your burgers well done?
It's the same thing.
How about that? Do you eat your burgers well done?
Yeah.
Or do you eat them medium or medium rare?
Yeah.
Do you eat your steaks well done, cooked all the way through? Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not as enjoyable that way.
No. Yeah. So right. I think if people just stop and like use a little common sense sometimes, like, oh, it's just,
right.
you know, the food that you're buying, if it's commercially made, you know, mm-hmm. fresh food, raw food, whatever, you know, and if it's a company that you can trust and mm-hmm. you are, you know, convinced this is a great product for your cat or dog, you want to try it.
Right.
It's not going to make them sick. You know,
and
you take,
I understand the concern. There is concern there. There is bacteria in food. Bacteria
in all of our food.
And pets sick. Yes,
yeah.
absolutely.
Even salads, guys.
There, of course.
Even
but
those of us who eat salads.
You can make it safe.
Yeah.
Right. But it is possible to make it safe.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
you
absolutely.
Just have just use common sense when you're just like you do when you're cooking your own meals and your own
mm-hmm.
food preparation. It's no different. Just, yeah,
mm-hmm.
you don't have to be afraid to you know, try something like this, even if your vet is like all geared up with a hazmat suit. If you come in and tell them your pet eats a raw diet, you know,
right?
It's that's a real thing. It's actually.
Oh yes, I've heard about that.
There's
yep.
vets that have done that. It's a shame. Just go. Are you kidding?
They're just showmen who are pointed in the wrong direction.
Absolutely.
They've got that sense of flair, but. They're
yeah.
just headed in the wrong way.
They just don't know what they don't know.
Yeah. And that's, you know.
Yeah. Guys, if you are watching, do you guys have any other questions about pet food safety tonight that maybe we haven't covered? Any other thoughts before we start wrapping up the show? If so, please drop a comment in the comments, and we'll be happy to address. Brad, can you think of anything else that's important in terms of pet food safety that you wanted to bring up that we haven't, or maybe
oh,
we just
geez,
kind of skimmed
know.
Over
kind
too
of,
fast?
I think I was a little bit disjointed, so I might have jumped around a little bit and missed something very important.
No, I think we covered a lot.
But I mean, it starts at the farm.
Mm-hmm.
Really good quality sourcing. That's going to be your best friend. That's going to be really important. After that, how is the manufacturing? You know, we do small batches, 1,500 pounds. In between each batch, we thoroughly clean and sterilize all the equipment.
Mm-hmm.
After that, we do our high-pressure processing step. And again, we just talked about how that's not a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
Used to get kind of demonized a bit, but the food that comes out of it is still fantastically beautiful raw food, and now it just has much less bacterial load.
Yeah.
And then after that, one thing I didn't mention, we also do a test and hold process, and so all of that food gets tested, and we don't release it until we get the results back, which usually just takes a few days.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
But a good thing to talk to companies about, even after that step, is transportation and storage.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how much food are you making? How long is it sitting around? At Steve's, our food is made to order, and so it usually ships out to distributors within about a week of being produced. It's
mm-hmm.
pretty darn fast turnaround.
That's fast. Yeah.
Yep. And then we have these super great refrigerated trucks that keep the food super duper cold. It's
mm-hmm.
stored in walk-in freezers in the at the distributor.
Yep.
It gets shipped to your favorite local store in another refrigerated truck or on dry ice.
Mm-hmm.
And then they keep it in their freezer there. And so it has a pretty short road to your store. And every step of the way, it's very carefully cared for.
Yeah. Now, if people are feeding the canned or the dry foods, it's
mm-hmm.
important that you ask your pet food manufacturer, what are their transportation methods and where are they storing these products in you know, what kind of warehouse situation? Because a lot of that, if it's just an air-conditioned, you know, trucks and warehouses that aren't climate-controlled very well, and, you know, that can lead to a lot of problems. So storage is important, you know, before it gets to your store where you're
mm-hmm.
buying it. What happens to it between the time it leaves the manufacturer and the time it gets to your store? So those are very important considerations. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
Pausancia says, is it safe to give a KFC chicken without the skin to the cat? Yeah. It's cooked. Yeah. If your cat likes that, that's like fresh food. It's just, you know, a little cooked. That's, you know, it can be a treat. It can be a nice little addition of human food to go with your dry food. So, again, you have to be creative and just find ways that you can implement some fresher options, you know.
And a pro tip for KFC, I would go for their grilled chicken if you're going to you are going to offer any of it to your cat. I'd do a small amount and go for their grilled chicken versus their fried.
Mm-hmm. Less fat. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
And the heating process. Okay. Well, thank you so much. We are going to wrap things up here tonight, but thank you guys for joining in. I hope this was helpful and gives you something to think about the pet foods that you are buying and supporting and the companies that that are behind those, and start doing some homework and see if you like the information you're finding when you start digging into their websites and their products and their sourcing and all of these very important considerations when it comes to pet food safety. So thank you guys so much. And thank you, Brad. We'll have to do this again sometime.
Of course. It's always so much fun, Pam. Thanks for having me on.
You guys have a great rest of your evening, and we will see you next month for more fun. So thanks, everyone. Good night. Well, that was awesome. Thank you,
cool.
My friend.
Of course, anytime.
Okay, well, I'll let you go. Have fun with your kids and your pups.
Thank you. Yeah, I think they were headed to bed. I got to pack up, and I'm out early tomorrow morning. So.
Well, have a safe trip and a lot of fun.
Thank you. I hope too.
You will. Okay, thanks, and we'll talk to you later.
Sounds
bye.
Good. See you again.
Hear all of our previously aired broadcasts of News for the Soul online at newsforthesoul.com. Now let's get back to the show.